Welcome to the Brown Mama Blueprint Podcast, the official podcast of Healthy Start, Inc., where we keep it all the way 100 on how to live your best brown mama life with tips, advice, interviews, and stories on Black Mommin' for Life, hosted by speaker, author, influencer, and advocate of all things brown mama, Muffy Mendoza.
What's up, y'all? This your girl, Muffy Mendoza, here with another episode of the Brown Mama Blueprint Podcast, officially sponsored by Healthy Start, Inc. Y'all know what to do. If you are a mom who needs some support right now, if you are a mom who just had a baby and you really need to find your village, you need to get some Pampers, you need to maybe find a doula. If you're a mom who's pregnant, you have a dad in your life, a baby's dad, a husband, a partner, and he needs some support. We have somebody here for you right now, but you can also go on over to HealthyStartPittsburgh.org and you can become a part of their fatherhood program. So thank y'all for tuning in. Another episode of the Brown Mama Blueprint Podcast. I have some awesome guests today. Y'all know all season long, we have been talking about issues that affect Black mothers, specifically in those years of maternity, in those early years of raising a baby or having a baby and then starting the journey towards raising an adult, really is what it's about. So today we're talking about fatherhood. You know, one of the things I've always wanted to do is get more dads on our podcast because I feel like we need to hear from dads, because oftentimes as women, we are assuming what we think we know that men are thinking, and we don't know what men are thinking. We're just thinking we don't know. And so I got hooked up with my partner Healthy Start, and they put me in touch with Mr. Rick Cobbs, who is a beacon here in the Pittsburgh community, and who's also in charge of the fatherhood program. So thank you for joining today, Mr. Rick.
Thank you for having me, Muffy.
And we also, y'all know, if you are a fan of the Brown Mama Monologues, then you've been a part of the Brown Mama Monologues. You've probably listened this year. We just finished our show 2 weeks ago. And Mrs. Kiki Brown, the legendary Mrs. Kiki Brown, Pretty Kitty on your radio. I remember Kiki from when I was a teenager. She was on the radio. And her and TJ. And what was the other dude?
There
was
Boogie.
Who?
Boogie.
Boogie, yep. It was her and TJ and Boogie. And they were like, they were our idols. They were the people we looked up to. But little did I know, the person my mom looked up to on the radio was Kiki's dad. So, you know, it's really awesome to have her here. Hey, Kiki, what is up? Thank you for joining us.
Hey, my friend. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure and an honor. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
So as I said, today we're going to be talking a little bit about fatherhood. So of course, we got to start off talking about our daddies. So, you know, I just spilled to them before we got on here who my dad is. I met my dad when I was 28 years old, and it was life altering and life changing for me. So tell me a little bit about your daddies. Mr. Rick, you want to start off?
Sure. Once again, thanks for having me, ladies. I was raised by my stepdad, and my stepdad worked at the Postal Service and eventually became the EAP guy, employment assistance person. So he helped me to start my personal career. But along the way, I was taught some real strong life lessons by my dad. I remember leaving Kentucky Fried Chicken. I was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken, Baum Boulevard. I was in the ninth grade. And I told my dad that they're not treating me fair. And this is old school. So my dad punched me in the chest. And he was like, hey man, who told you you get a fair one, man? You're a Black man. So you figure out how to navigate this world. So Whether you got to go over it, whether you got to go around it, whether you got it, but you don't get no fair one, Black man. That's not how this goes. My mom believed in Black excellence. And it was funny because after my dad did that, all my little cousins and older cousins was like, they start calling me, hey, Mr. Fear, hey, Mr. Fear. Because the reality is you ain't going to get no fair one, but you're not going to be a victim to this world. We stand up as Black men. And that's what my dad taught me. That's what my mom taught me. Against all odds, you stand up, you make a way. And if you're a Black man, not only do you have accountability to yourself, but you got accountability to a family. So while you're raising your family, while you're raising your kids, is that the visual you want to give them? Life is tough, so I quit. Nah, we rumble. And I got that from my mom and my dad. And I'm so proud of that because I think I've been able to pass that along to my children. I got four adult children. I passed that on. I see the conversations my dad and my mom had with me come out of my children's mouth to their children. I was blessed enough to that. And this is I worked in the community. So I got to be the Coach Rick at the YMCA who did the mentoring program. I had to get to be Coach Rick who had the blessing of not just doing boys basketball, but also girls basketball to watch young sisters grow up and watch young sisters and not just necessarily play basketball, but understand leadership development and against all odds. And we're going to overcome. So those are my foundations that I got from my dad that has enabled me to sort of give back to my own children, that's enabled me to give back to my community, that's able to a legacy of what's gone on for us as Black people in Pittsburgh from the 40s to keep those messages going along. Because my mom came from Yamasee, South Carolina into Pittsburgh in the 40s. So I just feel blessed. I feel honored to be on the show. I feel honored to be a service to my communities. And that's all because of my parents and my dad.
And I'm so glad that you started saying stepdad and then you ended all the way through saying
my dad.
Because, that's my dad.
You know, we don't, in our community, there's no step.
That's my dad.
Either you family or you not family. That's it. And dad is dad. Mm-hmm. I had a stepdad growing up, you know. I had a stepdad and he meant everything to me. He passed away right before I got to know my dad. He passed away and it was crushing. It was life altering losing him because he was the only man I'd ever known as my father. And so we're grateful. My own husband is a quote unquote stepdad for my oldest son, but he's been calling him dad since he was 3 years old. Right. So, you know, we just want to acknowledge all of the stepmoms, quote unquote, stepdad, stepsisters and brothers. That doesn't exist in our community. We love on each other in ways that transcend titles, you know, and that's what's most important. Kiki, you want to tell us a little bit about your dad and your relationship with your dad?
Well, the majority of people know my dad, Sly Jock, well-known legendary radio personality and DJ in the city of Pittsburgh. He's known in other states as well because he's had a career in playing good music, party music, and getting parties started, whether it was a reunion, whether it was a party, a birthday party, an anniversary, a wedding reception, whatever it was. My dad was behind those turntables and he was making it happen. And so many people remember that. He was the first DJ on the radio to play hip hop music. And so he kind of paved the way for a lot of our DJs today, like Nick Nice, Black Steel, TJ, Brother Marlon, Selecta, so many DJs here in the city of Pittsburgh. They will credit my dad for where they are in their careers as radio personalities or as party DJs. So that's who my dad is to Pittsburgh, but to who he is to me, he's Clifford. He's sly in the streets. He's sly and he would be pissed at me if he heard me say that. But I've fought that for a long time, accepting the fact that my dad had a role in the community as, you know, a legend. To me, he's just dad. He was the person that, you know, gave me money when I had a field trip, bought my school clothes, disciplined me when I was out of order. And reared me, basically just kind of guided me along, and helped me find my voice, helped me find my true self and helped me find my true passion. He played a very big role in that. So, you know, when he's home, he likes to relax. He likes to talk on the phone. He likes to watch TV. He likes to yell at the TV. He loves family. He's not private at all. So, he'll share anything with you. He'll give you his last dollar if he had it. He'd definitely help you. And now that he's aging, he's a lot more sensitive. And so I'm starting to see a different side of my dad that not everybody in the city of Pittsburgh gets to see. So, you know, I'm starting to see different shades of Sly. And so, yes, definitely. Not only is he growing older, but I'm growing older with him. And so that's my dad.
And so I'm glad you said that, because there was that one, I mean, my favorite part of Katie's monologue that she did about her dad, which just gave such a beautiful visual, was when you were talking about holding your dad's hand and trying to step into his footsteps. I just felt like that was just
his strides, match his strides. Yeah.
You said you were trying to match his strides, and it brought back a story that my grandmother tells me about when my dad, before my dad left us, and how close I was with him, because he would basically, my grandmother would say, whenever he would take me places, I would always try to stand the way he stood. So if he was standing with his hands in his pockets, I would stand with my hands in my pockets. If he was standing with his arms crossed, I would stand with my arms crossed. And I think it's just so indicative of how we as daughters really look up to our fathers. As like you said your father was the first man you ever fell in love with.
Yeah,
I feel like that's, when I met my father, I didn't realize that I'd never been loved by a man, because I hadn't been loved by my father. And I feel like that's so important. So we can kind of segue there to really talk about just dads and the narratives. There are so many negative narratives about Black fathers out here. And it, honestly, it wasn't until I seen my own husband with my sons that I realized how negatively these stereotypes are affecting Black men. Because my husband is so gentle with his sons. He's gentle, but he's stern. And because I didn't grow up with my father, I didn't know, I just figured all men were hard, you know, but that's not true. I feel like men, when they're with their children, they kind of turn to mush almost. And it's beautiful to watch that with Black fathers in particular. So I wonder,
I would say they're the most sensitive.
Right.
The most sensitive.
Sometimes I find myself having to be the disciplinarian because my husband is so like, unless it's like, if it's like Mr. Rick said with his dad, like when his dad, he told his dad that he didn't get a, they weren't being fair to him at work. If it's something like that, then my husband's like, nope, we got to handle this. This is not going down like this. You need to change what you think. You might get a punch in the chest, all of the above. But if it's like everyday stuff, like they didn't wash the dishes or something, he's like, you, that's okay.
That's a wrap. Yeah.
So, Mr. Rick, I wanted you to talk about that a little bit. Just like, how do negative stereotypes about Black men affect Black fathers?
Hey, Brown Mamas. It's evident what we all have in common. Motherhood. It's one of the hardest but most rewarding responsibilities ever. Healthy Start wants to make sure that you are good from day one. Our lives are on the line, but together, we got this. From prenatal education to mental health support, our team covers all bases. We'll even bring you diapers every month. We partner with other community-based and grassroots organizations and Black birth workers to make sure you have a village. We're also working to effect change within our healthcare system and have stepped up our services to make sure you have support during the pandemic. Visit our website at HealthyStartPittsburgh.org to learn more about our doula services, the Healthy Start Center for Urban Breastfeeding, our programming for fathers, and more. Or give us a call at 412-247-4009. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Get with the Brown Mama program today and start building your village with Healthy Start.
Well, that's all we hear, is that the fathers ain't there. And we hear that not just from the media, but we hear from internal in the community. But that's not the reality. Fathers can be nurturers, and they are nurturers. And I look at my own how I raised my children. I was the nurturer. I was the one who, I mean, you talk about fathers go to mush. I was thinking, especially with their daughters.
Yes.
When my sons wanted to get something done in the house or wanted a toy or something like that, they would go like, Ebony, go talk to dad. and our relationships have even blossomed because of the nurturing relationship that I've had with all of my children, and especially my daughters. My oldest daughter is Tonya, and Tonya would kill a rock over me. Tonya's like the little sister soldier in the community. And my daughter Tonya talks about like, hey, my dad came to Rajasthan and he told me, shh, don't worry about it, baby. I've got some tampons in your locker. You'll be okay. She tell those stories. I still have daddy-daughter day with my daughter who's 28 years old, the baby, Ebony Boo Boo baby. And we were just watching TV a couple of weeks ago, and she's an adult now. So I want to give her her space. So we're sitting on our couch and we're watching television, and my baby put her head on my shoulder. She's 28 years old. I'm like, still my baby. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. we've not only are those negative stereotypes that we get, but I think we also don't see sometimes the men in our communities who become surrogate fathers to the whole community. Yep. Those men who are the coaches, those men who are the barbers, those men who step in and they're dating and they become that father figure to the children that's in that household. We have so many men that step up, but that's not the narrative that is given. We have so many men, like right now, I have to have like conversations over and over with different agencies because I want Pampers for my guy. I got a man who's asking me for Pampers, and I don't necessarily want to go through no red tape to get this dude Pampers because that is not necessarily what guys do because we're so prideful. Mm-hmm. So we want to get it off of our own. We want to get it out the dirt and out the mud. But when we support each other, and that's what we're doing now, we've got collaborative programs where men come together to support men. When fathers come on my caseload and they're asking about services, I'm able to introduce them to other men who are able to uplift them. And if they can uplift them, they uplift their families. And men are nurturing, men are caring, especially with our families. And I think that men see that we have an accountability to our children to help them to get into this next generation. So the narrative that's a negative narrative, we know where that's coming from and we know why that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I'm so glad that you mentioned this collaborative, these things that you're trying to do in terms of helping Black men to kind of be able to work within their own tribes to get the things that they need. I didn't realize how tribal men were until I had my three sons, because my three sons, they stick together like it's crazy. Sometimes I watch them and I'm just like, they're way more group oriented than women are. Because women,
that comes from their dad. That comes from their dad. And I'm sorry.
No,
that
go
comes
ahead.
From their dad and what their dad instills in them. So, like you said, in tribal, when you go back and you think about the position of the father, back in Africa, the father was the king of the family. He was the head, he was the main hunter. And so his position in that family was to teach the young man to take his role when it was time for him to be called home. And so they have to teach the young men and the young kings how to be leaders of their tribes. And so even now, our fathers who are active in the family's lives, their role is to teach their young sons to maintain order. You are carrying my legacy. And so this is something that you must have. This is what I expect of you. So make sure you look out for your sisters. Make sure you look out for your brother. Make sure you look out for, make sure you look out for your mother. Your mother is the queen. You make sure Amen. You protect her. So already instilled in them. So your sons that have that is because their fathers trained them, or they've adapted that behavior from their father. And so even if he didn't physically say it, they look at his position in the family and say, I want to be the king. I'm going to be the king one day. And so I need to gain this position as well. So I'm going to do whatever I have to do so that I can learn that. And so that's why they're like that.
Yeah, and dads, you're right, Kiki. Dads are so instrumental in that because sometimes, with men, I think with men and women, because we are so different in terms of cognitively the way we think about things, I'll watch my husband, and my husband's a man of very few words. Like, he's not gonna say a whole lot, but when he, like, we know when he means business. Like, when he, yeah, we just know because he takes a stance. Like, ain't nothing moving past right here. So, and that's so important that boys and girls, I want to reiterate that because everybody thinks like, oh, it's important for boys to have their fathers, but it's so important for girls to see that too. Because I will say, meeting my father made me start taking a hard stance on the things I did not want. Because there are certain things to this day, and some of them are dysfunctional. But there's just certain things that my father is never going to budge on, period.
You know what? It's funny because my oldest daughter says this to me because I raised them. I raised my babies. And she said something to me that I never thought of. She said, "Dad, a lot of my girlfriends, they call their boyfriends daddy." And she says she comes at them like,
Oh,
"No, you just ain't had
sorry.
no." She said that how she said that how creepy that sounds. And she said for her, because she actually had a father. So she's like, "No, your daddy is your father." So it sounds real like strange to her. And she checks her own girlfriends and she says to me, she said, "Dad, the reason they say that, because they never had a father who raised them." And I never even thought about that.
That's the truth. And that makes so much sense because, like I said, if up until I met my father, I didn't even really realize that I'd never been loved by a man. Well, not mean I say that, because me and my husband have been friends since we were 18. So even before we got married, we had a basis of friendship. But even meeting my father taught me how to embrace my husband's love. Because before that, I will fully admit, and people have heard me talk about this, I talk about it in my book, I've talked about it on my blog, I've talked about it in videos. The love between me and my husband was dysfunctional until I met my father. Because my father taught me how to properly love a man. He taught me the function of a man. He taught me how a man is supposed to maneuver, to where oftentimes I would be looking at my husband like, you're doing too much, or you don't need to tell me what to do or how to do it. But when I met my father, I realized a lot of what my husband was doing was trying to protect me. And also, it was trying to create imagery for our sons in terms of them understanding the dynamics between a man and a woman. And so I think it's just that fatherhood piece is so crucial for girls. It's
And like when I first met Trevin, Trevin and I have been together almost 20 years. The thing that I most admired about him was he's 10 years older than I am. And he has the same similarities that my dad has. So his height, that one thing, his thought process was another. I always see you talk, think of a man. And he liked Twizzlers. My dad loves Twizzlers. He would wear jute. My dad wore jute. Size 13 shoe. My dad wore size 13 shoe. So it was just like, oh my God, he's just like my dad. And so that was like, maybe it's a sign. Maybe it's something that, that was something that my father had such an influence on the men that I dated. Like, he was just like, if he doesn't shake your hand, and if he doesn't look you in the eye, he shakes your hand, he's not being honest. If a man doesn't, the way that a man walks down the street, if you're on the inside, he cares. If you're on the outside, he doesn't. He has to open the door for you. He has to be honest from the gate. The relationship that you have with your father totally has everything to do with the man that you pick in your life. And the relationship that you don't have with your father has everything to do with the man that you pick in your life.
He
So
gives
I it's a big, big deal. It really is, especially to daughters.
They represent the standards that you come to expect in
Yeah.
men. I've often looked back on my life and thought like I've done a lot. I've done a lot with my life. I've been influential. But guess what? When I think about it, there is nothing that has been more important to me in my life than raising my children. Nothing even comes close to that, because the legacy that we get to give, how I watch my daughters and my sons move in this world, how I watch them interact with their children, how I watch them interact with just people in the world, is because of the legacy mm-hmm. that's been passed down about how important fathers is, the role that you have to play in raising your children. There's nothing more important than that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, 100%. Okay. So I guess I kind of answered my own question, but I want to hear y'all's perspective on this. In terms of healing the wounds of fatherlessness, how do we go about that? As two people who have had men play central roles in your lives, what do you think are some of the things that we need to do for our children who don't have a father, and helping them to return to some state of or feeling of wholeness? Because I feel like it's so difficult. Having a dad or a mom, I think, is one of those things that you don't know what you're missing until you have it. And then it's kind of like, oh, that's what I was missing. Because it's like kids create a baseline for normal, right? Whatever they're born into, that's their baseline for normalcy. They don't know to see things any differently. So how do we help children who maybe have a baseline for normal that doesn't include male role models, that doesn't include fathers, that doesn't include, you know, rearing underneath a man? And I specifically want to hear from you, Mr. Rick, because I know you're working with fathers, and I know probably some of the fathers that you work with don't have a baseline for fatherhood. So how do you help them?
Let me answer the first question about the narrative. So how do we stop that narrative? It takes all of us, the Black men and the Black women, to kill that from the gate. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we start hearing it, we got to be like, nah, that's not what's up. And we can back that up with statistics and facts. So let me say what I learned as a kid, as a friend. So if I'm someplace and I hear somebody talking noise about my best friend, I'm standing up. Or even somebody who I know that's not their character. I know that's not their character. So I'm telling that third person, who are you talking about? That's not how this dude move. And don't put that out there on them. So we need our Black women to be able to stand up for Black men and kill that narrative, number one. But it's also what our Black men have to do for our Black women to kill that narrative. We're not going to let that happen. We're not going to have that go on in our communities. We're not going to be the ones who continue that narrative. Number two, I think we've got to come together and figure out what's out there for us. We got to do those relationships and resources. Get those young men and women involved in programmatic things where there are men involved. Mm-hmm. Get those folks involved in music. And I know, I think Dr. Johnson and those guys still do that, African American Music Institute in Homewood. We got to figure out like our football programs and our sports and recreation programs. We took kids to the Million Man March. So what are the programs? And that's something that I hope that I can continue to help with. Here are some resources. Here are men who are at our family support centers. Here are men. I'm working with my man, Brother Neil, who's down here in Homewood. I'm working with my man, Derek, who's down here in Lawrenceville. I'm working with my man, Art Terry, who's at the county. I'm working with George Fleming, who's at AFN. There's programs out here.
Fleming.
Yep, there's men out here. When you said Sly Jock, I'm like, oh my God, that's Clifford's baby. So real talk, how do we like be able to say, Muffy, when you got a mother who's like in Hazelwood and she's like, well, I don't know where to turn. Then you're able to be like, oh, well, here's some programs in Hazelwood. Here's some men who are doing things in program. But what we have to do is we got to be able to get them fake ones out of there and figure out who's for real and who's like, who's just faking the game. Because I've been in social service for a long time. And one of the things that I realize is everybody who's working in social service ain't for social service. And sometimes you got people who get in at 9 and their big role, their big responsibility for the day is, man, how do I get to 5 o'clock? Not in servicing their constituents. So it's very important to find out, put those real men out there as role models.
Absolutely. And I was going to follow up with that, asking like, what do support systems for Black fathers need to look like? Because like you said, there's so many, I feel like with, first you're starting off with a man who, I know from personal experience with my own husband, he wants to get it himself. He doesn't want to ask 50 million people. And if he has to ask somebody, he'd rather ask somebody like Mr. Rick versus white woman number two down at the county. You know what I mean? He doesn't, and he's not going to, period. Yep. He's not going to. He's not going to. So how do we create support systems for, like, what does this need to look like so that we can build a basis? Because the reality is everybody needs a safety net. Moms need a safety net. And the reality is for, since we stepped off of plantations, there's never been a safety net for Black men, period. They built a safety net for Black women because they wanted us to basically be able to deny our connection to our men. So how do we as Black women and the fathers who are working in our communities begin to build some type of support safety system for Black men where they feel comfortable asking for help? Because we have to, as Black men and Black women, we have to learn how to ask each other for help, because I feel like a lot of times that doesn't happen.
We have to make it safe to ask. We have to take away the shame, take away the distrust, and take away the negative aspect that asking for help is a sign of weakness. You know, we praise people who get out of prison, but we judge people who get out of college. That has to change. The mindset has to change. And so once that changes, and that maybe that's how we raise our young kids, you know, from babies, and teaching them that, you know, ask for help. It's okay that if you don't make the team, it's all right. You know, you have to start the makeup at home, I believe. And that's how you start your own personal network. And then it's okay. Let your kids know, hey, Miss Carrie down the street is the notary, or such and such across the way can help you get this, that get this and that. Don't frown on someone who needs help. You know, we have to stop that perception that asking for help is weak, or, you know, do it. If you can't do it, it's okay that you can't do it. I love my stepdad. I call him my bonus dad. I call him my pops. He is not a handyman. He's not a handyman. He's not. And that's something that, you know, my mom had to learn and say, well, you know, your dad is just not a handyman. So we're going to get such and such down the street, or we're going to ask. And he has no problem, but he'll tell you, like, I hope I'm on topic. It just starts from home and having that conversation and letting your family know that it's okay. If you need help, it's okay to ask someone for help. It's okay to provide that safety net and to have that conversation. Mr. Cobbs, if you want to share on that, hopefully I touched on some of it.
Absolutely. You know what? I think number one is understanding that men and women, and this is just, they're different. Mm-hmm. And we can be effective, but not still doing it the way women do it. And that has to be.
Say that again.
Yeah, we really do. We really do. Yeah. Because we can have the same goals, but we get there different ways. And sometimes what I've seen is that we may have a mom, a mother, whoever's like, this is how it's done. And the father's like, nah, this is how I do it though. And we're like, no, but this is how it's done. And we may not be open to understanding that a guy's gonna move a little differently. I just had a very intense conversation with one of the ladies who I work with about a guy who needs Pampers. And I understand where she was coming from. She was saying, here's what we do when a mom needs Pampers. And here's, I'm like, but this dude don't ask for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I understand, and you just said it, Muffy, I'd rather get it from the mud. I'd rather go out here and work 6-7 jobs than be asking some white person for anything.
Yep.
That's not happening. So when we got people who look like us, men who look like us, who say, bruh, I got you, and I got you mean I got you, then we need to be able to come to a Muffy, come to a Kiki, be like, hey, I need some resources for this dude. And don't make them jump through 30 hoops.
Not shame them for it.
Don't even make them jump through 30 hoops, because it's different for a man who may say, I need help, I need Pampers, I need baby supplies, than a mom, because it's been so ingrained and so natural. And so it just is. So when I got a Black guy who's asking for resources and asking for helps, I feel not just obliged, but it's necessary, because he needs to know this dude got me. And then he can pass it on to some other dudes. I'll drive past, and we got a lot of flaggers in our community. So if I'm driving past and you look like me, I'm dap you up. Hey man, you all right up here? I go down to the store. I might grab some juice or some whatever. I'm coming back up the hill and I'm giving you like, here's some chips, here's some juice, man. You be all right, man. They'd be like, thank you. I'm like, hey man, and you pass that on to the next man. We have to start building our communities together as families, and then don't be so judgmental. Be open. Like, I don't necessarily have to say, Kiki, that's not how I would have did it, as long as it's effective. Muffy, that's not how I would have did it, as long as it's effective. And we need to reverse to come for us. I used to have my kids out, and it would look, people would think I was crazy. Sometimes I had my son out, and I'm like, I got a diaper bag, and I may not have no wipes. Or I'm running in the restroom, and you know that little blower machine, and I'm wiping him up, and he's blowing. I got his little butt up there. Let's go, baby. We're good. But that's not necessarily how a woman would do that. But that worked for me. I watched my
son. Done.
How about that? I watched my son, and I cracked up with that. He has to be on school for his son. So he didn't have these little things that you put in your phone so you could do your on school stuff. This dude did some stuff where he bent up a hanger and did this and put the little, I'm like, my dude.
You gotta make it work. And he learned that from somewhere.
I cracked up when I seen that little hanger thing that he did. But we got to understand, men don't have to be like women, and they shouldn't be. And that's what makes a well-rounded child.
That's right.
This is how my mom did it. This is how my dad did it. I got the mix of both of them.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you just said, because to me, it points out the fact that I think what we have to realize sometimes as Black women is that Black men need to build their own network. Just like with brown mamas. Brown mamas was not built because white woman number two down at the county came and said, we need a support group for Black moms. It's a group of Black moms who did it. So we need to allow Black men to build their support group the way it needs to feel for them. I always have a saying in my life that essence is everything, which means how something is built from the foundation is going to tell you how it's going to function later in life. And so we can't ask Black men to extend themselves outside of a community that they have not yet created for themselves. They have to create a foundation. And then once they create a foundation, it's the whole thing about this thing that we're always talking about, a seat at the table. The reason why the seat at the table is not fair is not because Black people can't get a seat at the table. It's because the seat that Black people are coming, well, the mentality that Black people are coming from oftentimes is built on white stuff. And so when we get to the table, sometimes we don't even know what to ask for that is actually fair for our community. So we have to step back from the table, honestly, build something that is completely and totally based on what Black folks need.
Amen.
And then we can sit at the table and be like, this is what we want, because this is what's good for us. Not this is what we want, but we're not sure if it's good for us or not. This is just what we want. And so I think we have to... As Black folks in totality, women and men, we kind of need time to insulate ourselves so that we can begin to build what we need with no outside external influences. And I think that's really difficult for us to grasp oftentimes as Black folks who are the descendants of enslaved Africans, because they've always been there. And so we're like, oh, well, what can we get from them? But sometimes we're not even realizing we have that in our own community.
Amen.
It exists within our own hands. It exists within our own minds. We have to build it.
Yep.
We got to build it.
Sister, you know what, Sister Muffy? I'm listening to you, and you're resonating so much with me. But guess what I think? I don't even want to sit at the table. I want to build our own table.
That's right.
I want to build our own table.
Do it.
I don't want to even.
But I want to sit at both.
Yes.
I want to sit at both.
Because
they need to know what we're doing. They need to know what we're doing. And I need to know what they're doing. And then I need to sit at our table that we built so we can tell them what we're doing and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I want to see that both.
You know what's funny? I have this conversation with my exec. I have this conversation with my direct supervisor. They're both women. And they say what you say. And they talk about how it's important for us to teach. And guess what? I'm listening, but I don't necessarily feel that way.
Mm-hmm. And, that's fine.
But I know, but guess what? Here's what I feel like. Black man perspective, just my perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't feel I need to teach nobody how to be humanistic and what should be right and what's just human. So anybody who don't do that, you made a conscious choice. So for me, just for me, I'm going to spend my time, my energy building people that look like me, mm-hmm. building them youngins, them young fathers who look like me. Now, I'm not saying it's not necessary. It ain't just my lane. I'm going to build for us. Then there's no question about there being no outside influences because we know what's best for us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to marginalize that we need a seat at that table.
Yeah, I think that for me, the mm-hmm. seat at the table is more so about checks and balances for mm-hmm. me. It's mm-hmm. not about teaching, because I agree with you, Rick. I don't feel like we need to teach nobody nothing. I'm not teaching you how to treat me. Learn how to treat me. You just like you learn how to do everything else you learn, you can learn how to treat people in a way that is humane. But mm-hmm. I feel like when we're talking about this table, this proverbial table, and we're talking about the people who are sitting at table, the reason why an Asian man is sitting at the table, the reason why a Black man is sitting at the table, the reason a Native American man is sitting at the table is for checks and balances. Because we need to make sure that what you're doing in your community is not potentially harmful to our community. And you need to make sure what we're doing in our community is not potentially harmful to your community. So that's my thought process around that. And I think it all of that goes back to the nucleus of the family that's behind every seat at the table. What is good for that nucleus? What is good to make sure that what they say in the Bible, it might be a song, what God put together, let no man, you know, ruin or whatever that, and I don't know what it is, but, but yeah, what God put together.
I know where you're going. You know what I'm saying?
No man should be able to wreck that. And so I think mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we need people at the table who understand fully and completely what it means to have a whole Black community. And, mm-hmm. and who are interested in protecting those interests. And so I think that is where we are. That breakdown between dad and mom that sometimes happens in our community, not all the time, but sometimes happens in our community, is where we need to begin to repair. Because what we have to begin to see is it's the complementarity between Black men and Black women that's going to create this whole Black community that we're looking for. And complementarity doesn't mean sameness. It means differentness that complements.
Same goals, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So regardless of whether we dry in baby's butt.
On versatility is acceptable.
Right? Versatility is what makes mm-hmm. us.
Create who we are.
Human. Yeah.
That's who we are.
Who we are. That's right.
We're all different.
That's right. As long as the puzzle fits. As long as the puzzle fits and right? we get the full puzzle, it doesn't matter the shape, it doesn't matter the size, as long as it fits the entire scope of what we want, then whatever it is, I welcome it. I'm good with it. So as long as you have an understanding what leadership is, a leadership role, that there's a lead and that there's a team and there's no I in team, as long as it works, if that lead is the father of the family, if that lead is the mother and the father and that dynamic, then that works.
Absolutely.
I agree.
So my last question I want to ask y'all is, what do moms need to know about dads?
I think number one, moms need to make sure that they get a man of standard. They get a man who, not a quick relationship, not a relationship of convenience. And what we used to do years ago is court. So get to know that person before you kind of lay down with that person, make sure that, and for the man also. So mm-hmm. now you've made a conscious choice in who you have. Also, and if you had that conscious choice and he's a good leader, let him lead. Now you're the partner in this. We're the partner in this. So I think the Black woman has to be supportive. They have to be kill that narrative that Black fathers don't do this, Black men don't do this, especially if you got a guy who is doing that. And then also, it's incumbent on us, and I say, and I've said it, find those resources in those communities to also be able to support your children. I've been a program person for over 30 years, and it's amazing how many times that I've gone into a community and say, hey, we need to build a male mentorship program. And I have a woman say, I can do it. I'm like, nah, sis, I need a man to do it. And they kind of have this kind of like, nah, I can do it. Nah, sis, I need a man who can do male mentorship, not you. So I think some of it is like, let's understand what role we play in the development of relationship and development of our children. I am not, and it would seem asinine if there was a mother's program and I said I could do that, everybody would look at me like, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? And we have to understand what natural roles are and then come together as a family. But I think number one, let's make sure that we are conscious in our choices in our relationships. That's number two. Make sure that we're open and understanding that she don't have to roll like I roll. He don't have to roll like I roll, as long as we respect each other and we have a common goal. And then number three, find them resources, because we got some. I'm back in the community at Healthy Starts with the last 7 years working at Rivers Casino. And I am on a mission and on a journey. And I get so excited when I find out all of these real programs, these real brothers like yourself, Miss Muffy, like yourself, Miss Kiki, who are out here and who are making a difference. So now somebody says something to me, I can be like, oh, you need to holler at Muffy and them brown mamas. Oh, you need to holler at Miss Kiki. Miss Kiki can help you. So understanding what resources we have in our communities to be able to help us with our families.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Kiki?
For me, when I met my father, when I met my son's father, the goal was not to make him my baby daddy. it just so happened to happen that way. What I did not know was the relationship that he did not have with his father. And because he did not have a good, healthy relationship with his father, it caused him to not have a relationship with his children, that I later found out after I was pregnant with my son. And so that strained our relationship. But it was something, he can't be somebody he didn't know how to be from someone he could learn from. You know what I mean? Like, he was the only father that he knew how to be. But as he grew older, he developed a stronger relationship with our son, and I never talked bad about him to our son. But he realized, like, I'm not your child's mother. I'm not after your money. I'm after a relationship for you and our son. And so when he realized that, it became better. The guards were down because there was no attack. I wasn't attacking him. I didn't know that he had fears. I didn't know that he had insecurities. I didn't know that he didn't know. And so growing older, we grew that to love, respect, and understand one another. And now we co-parent, and our son is 23 years old. And there are still times where I'll be able to call him and be like, hey, baby daddy. And I do say that to him. Hey, baby daddy, we need to talk about our son. And he, you know, and he's a tough loved one, and we co-parent well. But going back 23 years ago, if I would have known then what I know now, I mean, I have no regrets, because that means I, you know, if I did, I wouldn't have my son. But I would understand where he was back then and why he was where he was back then, because he didn't have a relationship with his dad. So my advice to any young mother or any woman that's looking to start a family, the man that you got with, know his background. What's his relationship with his mom? What's his relationship with his dad? Understand that, because that's going to determine what your relationship with him is going to be.
I think that's really important that you pointed that out, Kiki, too, that I know with my oldest son's father, you know, we struggled whenever Jair was young. Because I just didn't understand for the life of me why you're not here. Like, why aren't you here every day? Why aren't you here every weekend? But I think that's crucial what you pointed out, because once I realized that he did not have a father, I've never badmouthed my son's father in front of my son. But the one thing I used to always tell him is like, daddy loves you. Daddy just doesn't know how to be a daddy right now. And that's really serious. I mean, and it's no different with women. I've been in close relationship with women who did not have their mothers around, and mothering was a feat for them because they did not know how to do it. And so I think as Black women and Black men, we have to be patient with each other. And, you know, I said this actually one time at a meeting with some people from Healthy Start. I was like, we have to realize we're broken in many, many ways. And it's not an indictment on Blackness that we are broken. It's an indictment on what happened to us when we got off them boats.
Amen.
But the reality is we a little bit broke. There's some things we gotta work out, and we're still working out. And it didn't take us, you know, we are what, just over 150 years removed from slavery, but we were enslaved for 400 years. So it's gonna take some time to work out these demons. But in the meantime, we gotta be patient with each other, because just like, you know, oftentimes, this is one thing I've gotten scrutinized for saying, but I'm gonna say it. A lot of times Black women don't want to be underneath that microscope. And I think it's because we're so used to being under the microscope. We were constantly under the microscope of the white man. So it feels bad when we are being criticized or just zoomed in on at all. But I think we have to begin to look at not only the Black man as one of the sources of fatherlessness, but the dynamics between the Black man and the Black woman, and not knowing how to properly forge those relationships. Because my dad says all the time, he said, Muffy, if me and your mom would have had elders over us that showed us how to engage in relationship, we would have made it. And people would tell me all the time about my dad. They were like, we could not believe when Eddie left, because you were always only with your father, period. And I remember being a little girl. I remember being a daddy's girl, because I loved my dad. But there was a breakdown in knowing how to maintain the relationship. And so moms who are listening right now, what I want you to know is that your child's father loves his child. He may not know or may not have the know-how to know how to perform that in a way that makes sense for your household, but that doesn't mean he doesn't love his child. It just means he's dealing with some dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Just like you're probably dealing with some dysfunction trying to figure out how to raise this child.
He's got some growing.
You know, exactly. He hasn't grown. Right. You haven't grown.
Some growing to do. Yep.
Yep. I tell my oldest son all the time, because he has a girlfriend, and I tell him all the time, you have to know that right now you are not the man that can make her into the woman she needs to be. And she is not the woman who can make you into the man you need to be, because you both need to grow. So just know that, especially if you under the age of 35 and you listening to this, you're still young. You're still young. You're still learning. You're still growing. He's still young. He's still learning. He's still growing. And things are not going to be perfect, because they ain't supposed to be. You know,
so. And the learning and growing doesn't stop the older you get. Listen. You just learn on a different level. It does not stop. Trust.
It's constant. Mm-hmm. But yeah, y'all, thank y'all for listening. Any last words, Kiki and Mr. Rick, anything y'all want to say before we deuces?
I'd like to make sure that we continue this relationship. I'd like to make sure that, I can introduce other men of substance, other Black men who are around our community who are putting in mad work and who's been doing things for years that people sometimes don't even know about. Yeah. Who are in our communities up in Garfield, up in Hazelwood, up in Northview Heights, up in down in East Liberty, in Homewood. We got some soldiers out here. And sisters, y'all ain't alone. And I'm talking about men who ain't winking and blinking at women. They're here to be like, how can I help uplift our community? Mm-hmm. Some sure enough men. So I'd like to make sure that we can continue that relationship. And if I could just be the conduit to introduce those guys to us, I'd like to be that.
Absolutely. Kiki, any last words?
Learn to love and appreciate the men in your life and understand why they are where they are. I learned in my relationship, my current relationship, that he loves to be the man. Let me be the man. Sis, let the man be the man. You are not the man. Let him be the man. He is the father. Let him be the man. These are two completely different roles. Please let him be the man. Sit down somewhere and let him do it. Even if you think he does not know, it's okay. Let him figure it out for himself. Be there for him. Be there for him. The father of your child, be there for him. Even if you know he doesn't know, but be there for him and allow him to say, okay, I don't got it. You be like, okay, well, I got you. No problem. Be that person. Be his rock. And for the young father out there, continue to be strong. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to ask for help. And continue to grow with your children, you know, and be transparent, be honest, and be strong.
Absolutely. Thank y'all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Brown Mama Blueprint Podcast. We appreciate you. We appreciate your ears for listening. As Jill Scott says, if you have ears to listen or if you have ears to hear, hopefully you got some jewels, because there was lots of jewels dropped here. We appreciate y'all. Thank you to Healthy Start once again for being the sponsor of our second season of our podcast. It means the world to me. That you guys have provided the resources. Don't forget to visit healthystartpittsburgh.org. If you're looking for a support group for you or a mom that you know, you can visit brownmamas.com and you can find a support group not in your area, because we only in Pittsburgh, but we are launching a chapter in Philly soon, so that's really exciting. But if you're in Pittsburgh, you know where to find. You know all of this if you're in Pittsburgh. So thank y'all for tuning in. Thank you, Kiki. Thank you, Mr. Rick.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
ladies.
You.
Thank
all
you.
Right. All right.
All right.
Peace.
See
ya.
Mama, thank you so much for taking care of yourself by listening to the Brown Mama Blueprint Podcast. Because when you take care of you, you take care of us. To learn more about the Brown Mama Movement, purchase the Brown Mama Mindset Curriculum for Black Moms, or to get even more tips on living your best Brown Mama life, visit brownmamas.com. Follow us on facebook.com/brownmamas or on IG at Brown Mamas Tribe. Until next time, remember that when you are a better mom, dads become better dads, children become better adults, and ultimately, our communities become better communities.